Hi, Mr. Vice President. How are you this morning?
Pretty good. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great. Last time we talked was right before the election. It's good to have you back here in Little Rock again with us.
I'm glad we survived the election.
Well, you did, and I'm glad that you all are in office. It's the best team that I can think of to lead the country, and I want to thank you for giving us some time this morning.
Happy to do it.
Let's talk about Social Security. It's been on a main topic, I know, on my talk show and on talk shows across the country. It's been on the news. It makes sense to me what the president is saying about personal savings accounts, but it doesn't seem to be gaining traction with large portions of the American public. Any idea why it's become so difficult?
Well, I think it's a tough issue. If it were easy, somebody would have solved it a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the important thing, I think, the point that we have been able to get across out there is that we need to address the issue that if we don't do anything on Social Security, that we're going to have significant problem down the road, and that those most affected by it are the younger generation. People that are already drawing benefits, that are retired or soon to retire, this won't affect them at all. But the fact of the matter is, the population profile has changed dramatically since Social Security was set up 70 years. 70 years ago, the average life expectancy was about 61 or 62. That meant over half the population didn't live long enough to reach age 65 and draw benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Today, life expectancy is up to around 78. We're about to have the baby boom generation here in 08. We'll reach age 62 and begin to take early retirement, and we're going to have a big surge in the number of retirees from around 40 million today to upwards of 75 million a few years down the road once that generation reaches retirement age. So you're going to have a lot more people drawing benefits out of a system and living much longer. So they draw benefits for a longer period of time, on average 16 years longer. And under those circumstances, a system designed in the 30s simply won't stand up over time. So we've got to make some changes. One of the changes we think we ought to make is to provide for personal retirement accounts on a voluntary basis. Nobody would have to do it, but for the younger generation, for those people born after 1950, so they'd have an opportunity to take a portion of the payroll tax, invest it, and earn a higher rate of return than they get from Social Security.
Well, as we talk about that, do you think that there's some kind of disconnect with, middle-aged people, that they don't understand that this is a better way of handling your money than the way it has been handled? At least you're going to get a decent return on your money. I mean, the money that's going into Social Security right now, you're not really getting much of a return on it.
That's correct. Less than 2%, around 1.6, depending on what assumptions you make and when you started paying in and so forth. The fact is, we've got a thrift savings plan that operates for federal employees and has since the 80s, that a lot of members of Congress belong to, where they're allowed to take a portion of their salary and put it into what's called a thrift savings plan. They invest in one of five different options that are made available by the government, a combination of stocks and bonds or treasuries, and some more conservative than others. But those have returned over the last 10 years. Those five plans have returned anywhere from around 5% to almost 11% real return. And when you compound that annually over time, you can see that if you had an opportunity to do that, that's clearly a better deal than what you get from Social Security. We're not talking about doing it with the entire payroll tax. We're talking about out of a tax of about 12.4% that goes in today to Social Security. That's for the employee as well as from the employer. We take about 4% of that as our recommendation and set up these personal retirement accounts. And at the end of the day, if somebody starting out today working, making the average wage of about $35,000 a year, they'd have a nest egg of better than $250,000 at retirement that would be all theirs, that nobody could ever take away from them. And that would be there, obviously, for their retirement. So we think it makes sense. That's one way we can help close that gap that otherwise is out there between the promised benefits and the fact that we've never made arrangements to fund those benefits.
Well, Mr. Vice President, when I talk to folks that are under 30 years old on my show, most say that they like the idea of these personal savings accounts. Folks that are in their 50s, like myself, I'm 52, they get a little nervous, and folks that are already on Social Security for some reason have yet to figure out, but they think that somehow they're going to lose benefits. Could you address those latter two categories, those that are in their, say, early to mid-50s and those that are already retired?
Well, what we've been saying is that anybody born after 1950, would have the option here. But if you're born before 1950, that is, if you're age 55 or older today, and you're almost there, Dave, I don't want to get personal, but
I understand.
It won't affect you.
Right.
And, the fact is that those folks that are 55 or older, under the proposal we were looking at, would draw benefits as currently promised. There'd be no change in the way the system worked for them, and they wouldn't be eligible for the personal retirement accounts simply because they don't have that much time before they reach retirement age to be able to benefit significantly from it. But for the younger generation, for those, say, born after 1950, you would have that opportunity on a voluntary basis. And again, nobody would be required to do this. We want to emphasize it's voluntary. But we think a lot of places, you can look around the country, several states, California, Texas, for example, I believe Ohio, number of cities where local public officials, local employees of government back in the 80s opted out of Social Security and went into similar programs, and they've done very well. So there's a well-established track record out there that people can look at it and say, yeah, this is a good, safe, and sound way to go to invest. And it also helps address some other inequities. You know, today, the way the Social Security system works, you could work your entire life. And if you drop dead at age 65, getting ready to retire, all that money you paid in is gone. You're never going to see a penny of it, nor will your family.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got kids, for example, and sure, your wife might get survivor's benefits. But bottom line is that this is a way to have a nest egg that's yours. Nobody can ever take away from you. You can leave it to your heirs, and if you don't spend it all during the course of retirement. So we think it's a good concept.
Mr. Vice President, Senator Blanche Lincoln here from Arkansas says that the savings accounts are off the table as far as she's concerned. She looks at Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare as a one-trick pony. I mean, can you deal with it all at one time, or do you have to break it into pieces and look at it one piece at a time?
Well, I think you've got to deal with it, all of those issues eventually, but I do think you need to look at it one piece at a time. The problems of Medicare, obviously, are that it's funded through a separate part of the tax, payroll tax. They're dedicated funds for that, and also partly through general revenues. And it's heavily affected by medical cost. There are provisions in the law now that will require a effort probably to reform Medicare some years down the road when we get to the point again when the baby boom generation, it's age 65 and they all start drawing on Medicare. But that's not currently the subject of debate. We think we need to deal with one of these issues at a time, and the issue at hand right now is Social Security. That's the one that we think we need to focus on. We did pass significant Medicare legislation here just a couple of years ago, providing prescription drug benefits for seniors. That was a first. That was an important step. We had a major medical program to provide health care for people, and it didn't provide any prescription drugs at a time when prescription drugs are more important than ever with respect to providing for people's health care. So that was a big reform. It'll kick in next year in 2006, and so we've been working the Medicare problem, but we think now it's time for us to focus on Social Security.
Well, let me change the subject just a little bit. I'd like to talk a little bit about energy. The president gave a speech yesterday, and I applauded it. I think many of the things that he brought up were very, very important ones. Let's talk about a few of those things. Refineries. How do we get more refineries built in this nation? When you've got to weed through all the regulatory paperwork. I think I read about one that was trying to be built down in Yuma, Arizona, and was going to cost them $5 million just to get through the regulatory paperwork they have to do.
Yeah, it is a problem. Our refineries, we haven't built a new one here since the early 70s. The ones we've got are running flat out at about 99% of capacity. And that's one of the reasons gasoline prices are as high as they are, because even if you can get the crude, we don't have the refining capacity to produce as much as we'd like to be able to produce. So one of the proposals the president's come up with is the idea that we could go to old military facilities that are no longer being used and set up an expedited permitting process and allow refineries to be built on some of those facilities, for example. So we're looking at various options and possibilities, and that's clearly one of them.
Yeah, even though, Mr. Vice President, even if we make it easier to start these refineries up, it's going to be 5-10 years down the road before they're built and they're starting to produce the gasoline. In between that time, is there anything that we can do to mitigate some of these high gas prices?
Well, what we obviously we're because we don't produce all that we use here in the United States, we're directly affected by the international price. We import more oil than we produce here at home. Now we use about 20 billion barrels a day. A lot of that obviously ends up as gasoline, but we have to import about 60% of that from overseas. So one of the things we did, for example, was the President and I met this last weekend with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and they are the world's leading exporter of oil. We talked to them about their long-range plans. They're investing in new capacity here, increasing their ability to produce oil by about 500,000 barrels a day for each year going forward. So they'll have a capacity of about 12.5 million barrels a day in 4 years. That's about 2.5 million barrels more than they produce today. So you can do those things, but it takes time. You know, everybody always gets all buzzed up when we hit a moment when gas prices go up, but the time to solve that problem was several years ago. Mm-hmm. And we all tend to end up, I think, too often with the short time horizons around here. You know, we've got ANWR there in Alaska. There's no reason in the world it couldn't be developed. Congress actually passed legislation authorizing that here back during the Clinton administration, but President Clinton vetoed the bill. We think we'll get it passed again this year and we'll go forward with it, but it'll take several years for that to come online, but it'll be about 1 million barrels a day. But it, bottom line on prices, it's basically a result of supply and demand, and we got rapidly rising demand in the world for petroleum and petroleum products, and we're not producing as much as we should, and of course, especially here in the United States, we put large areas off limits. We don't drill off the East Coast, we don't drill off the West Coast, we don't drill off Florida. Parts of Alaska are off limits, and the net result is we then have to take whatever we get in the international marketplace because we don't produce more of our own.
You know, Mr. Vice President, isn't part of that problem is that the American public doesn't understand that the oil industry does their job so much differently now? When they think of drilling for oil, they're thinking of a derrick shooting oil up in the air and it's falling on the ground and things of that nature, where in fact they're going to use ice pads up in ANWR. When we're gone, they won't even know that we've been there.
It's true. Our technology has gotten so good, you can go in on one parcel of land. Well, to give you an idea with respect to ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Reserve, it's an area about the size of the state of South Carolina. The area that would actually have to be disturbed in order to develop that is about half the size of Dulles Airport here outside Washington, D.C., because we can go in now and set up on a pad and using directional drilling, reach out several miles and down to great depths to be able to develop the resource. When you operate up there on the North Slope in Alaska, you go in and only do that in the wintertime. So you use ice roads going in, set up your pad and operate there. But you don't operate on the tundra, for example, in the summertime. And those ice roads go away. So you can do it very safely and sanely and cleanly and take care of the environment and at the same time produce the resources we need if we're going to have a strong, viable economy and people are going to be able to afford the fuel they need for their daily lives.
Last question for you, Mr. Vice President. What can my listeners do to help the President to get his judges through this whole thing with the filibuster that's going on up in the Senate? And, I mean, what kind of pressure can we put on the folks that are up there to get the business of this nation done?
Well, it would be very helpful to talk to your senators. The fact of the matter is, for 214 years, we operated without judicial filibusters. That is to say that nobody ever used the filibuster to try to stop the appointment of judicial nominees. Filibuster was used on legislation and so forth. Everybody understands that, but not judicial nominees. The Democrats in the last Congress filibustered about 10 of our nominees to the appellate courts. They've got another 7 they filibustered this year. And fact is the Republicans want to go back and restore the traditional way of doing business, and that is that if a judge nomination comes to the floor, he gets an up or down vote, and if they got a majority of the votes, 51 or more votes, they get confirmed. If they don't have a majority, they don't get confirmed. That's the way we say we've done it for over 200 years as a nation, and that's the way we think we ought to do it going forward. The Senate will probably address this issue here in the next few weeks, and it's important that the senators understand that people support the proposition that the fair thing to do is if somebody's got 51 votes, they get confirmed. If they don't have 51 votes, they don't.
Is this nothing more than liberals basically trying to set up a power struggle? Because we know somewhere here within the next year or two, I would figure, we're going to have a Supreme Court justice that has to be taken care of.
I think you're right, Dave. I think it is a lot of it's about the Supreme Court nominee, and what they're trying to do is to set a new bar that, in effect, would say you have to have 60 votes in order to get one of the president's nominees confirmed. Now, that's not been the case before for judges, and it shouldn't be the case now. And as I say, it's important for folks to communicate with their senators and make it clear they think that if somebody's got 50 votes plus one, that's the way we operate in a democracy. You get a majority, you prevail, and that's the way it ought to be done here.
Mr. Vice President, thanks for your time. Let's not wait so long to talk again. What do you say?
We'll do it. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You bet.